I heard you good with them soft lips. Yeah, you know word of mouth. The square root of 69 is a something, right? Cause I've been trying to work it out. Good weed, white wine. I come alive in the nighttime.
This episode is for all the sexy motherfuckers out there.
And the ones in the bedroom. This bedroom. Or in any bedroom, really.
This is Geraldine,
Amy,
and Sherry.
We have a special guest star with us tonight. Sitting in for Susan is our new pal and listener and official behavioral analyst.
Oh, we were so excited Sherry. When she emailed us and said she was a behavior analyst. We're like, come on the show immediately. And she did. So it's pretty awesome.
I know. This is a lucky turn of events that it just so happened that you're available and you're in LA and you reached out to us because you had heard something on the show that resonated, something mm-hmm. behaviorally analytic that Amy had said,
right?
Reaching back a few episodes ago about
the extinction burst.
The extinction mm-hmm. burst.
That's right.
I keep thinking it's extinction verse.
No, extinction burst.
Like your last stanza of poetry.
Before you expire.
Yeah, before the poem is done.
Right, that too.
But, so Sherry, you are here in LA. You're studying in a full-time PhD program.
That's right.
And you're living life.
I am. I'm enjoying it.
Longtime listener of the Because Show.
I can't even remember like when I started listening to you. It's been over a year at
That's
least.
That's amazing.
At least.
That's very sweet.
Super, super awesome to be here.
That's great. We're going to get into some behavioral chit-chat.
Analysis and chit-chat.
Yeah, because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have Sherry guide us through the hallways and corridors of the mind.
Oh my God, that sounds fun.
Well, actually.
The dusty hallways and corridors.
What is behavioral analysis? What are you studying anyway?
It's basically the science of human behavior is what I'm studying. And when you talk about behavior analysis, what you're looking at is the environment and its impact on behavior. So it's funny that you started out like the intricate hallways and passageways and corridors of the mind, because I have absolutely no interest in that.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's
behavior. Interesting.
That's all right.
That's super only interesting.
Only because it's the focus on behavior and what you can observe.
Mm.
So even though it started out in the field of psychology, which is the study of like a lot of people think of the study of the mind and the study of intentions and the study of will and
why
and all that. My field looks at actual observable behavior and the environment and the impact of the environment on that.
That's so interesting. I almost can't handle it.
So, well, I know that behavioral analysis started. There's three big hitters in the behavioral analysis field. One being Pavlov.
Mm-hmm.
B.F. Skinner.
Yep.
And John Watson.
Yep.
Okay, who's Watson? I know the other two.
So unfortunately, this is not like my area of expertise with the history. So I can tell you that Pavlov, the whole idea was his interest was reflexive behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So those are like automatic behaviors that are kind of reflexes or responses to stimuli. So you can't necessarily control them. So like if I poke you in the eye, you're going to blink. And that's a reflexive behavior. Pavlov did the whole thing where he, with dogs, mm-hmm. if they had food available to them, the reflexive response is salivation.
Right.
So he paired the food with the sound of a bell and conditioned the bell as a stimulus to elicit the salivation. Okay.
Right.
So the idea was that you could control behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Watson, I don't know a lot about, but I know that he started a lot of controversy, and B.F. Skinner as well started off the field with this kind of idea that there's no free will. People can't determine what's going to happen to them. It's all based on the consequences and controlling behavior. People don't really like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really, so in many ways, my field has a bad rap because...
Well, conditioning. People get scared mm-hmm. of conditioning, especially B.F.
Right.
Skinner's baby in a box experiment, which is my favorite.
Remind me of the baby in a box. I don't remember that.
The baby in a box.
I know we've actually talked about it on the show before.
We talked about this like last summer, but baby in a box was B.F. Skinner.
I've actually met his daughter, by the way, who
in
the box.
She's totally normal
she wrote a book, right?
She's awesome.
I was the baby in the box.
Yeah. but basically, he was trying to control the environment so it would be the most comfortable,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the most conducive.
So he put her in a teeny little coffin?
No, it was controlled for temperature.
The air crib. Mm-hmm. It was called the air crib. And it was a temperature controlled, it was supposed to be very suitable, the most comfortable for babies, but it never took off in like the mass marketing. Nobody wanted to do it.
Was it just an actual box with a lid?
Imagine a crib with you know what? I've never seen a picture.
What is it? Did you know what it looks like? Okay.
I'm more into like what's happening now.
Okay.
So I know that lots of people are interested in the history and I should become more educated so that I could respond better. But
I think all you need to know is baby in a box.
Right.
but see, that's it. But the problem is that my field started out with like some really poor marketing technique. The language that's used is very technical. You know, it's more exciting to think that I can do whatever I want and no one can control me and you can't change my behavior and yada, yada, yada. And to kind of like get into that, well, what's going on in the mind? And what about, when you think of Freud, like all of that is so much more sexy and exciting and, you know, interesting. So people don't like to think about, oh, well, it's basically based on the consequences of your behavior. Like that's what it's all about.
Okay. So I'm going to get into some nitty gritty here. And this is stuff that I know I want to know about. And I think our listeners want to know about too. But do you know what the deal is with cognitive dissonance?
Yeah.
That people are doing things that like, you know, it's bad for you, say smoking.
Yep.
But you keep doing it because you're able to fool yourself or talk yourself into it. Or do you know anything about that?
So here's how my field looks at that. It's about immediate consequences versus future consequences. And it's about certain consequences versus uncertain consequences. Okay. So when a consequence is immediate and certain, for example, I'm going to smoke this cigarette and it's going to make me feel really good. That's way more powerful than something that's future and uncertain, like maybe I'll get cancer. And that's
why people smoke.
And yeah, exactly. Smoke. Yeah.
That's it.
Oh. Yeah, even though you know better.
And it's the same thing with eating and exercising.
Or unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's about future unknown consequences. Huh. It's not for sure that those bad things are going to happen to
then
you.
Then why do you think there are some people who don't make that decision? Some people who don't start smoking. Some people who never have unprotected sex.
So that has to do with rule-governed behavior. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that you've heard these rules, and based on your history of reinforcement for following rules and getting benefits of them, you say, you know what? Someone told me this before and I followed that rule and they were right and I got the benefits of it, and so now they're telling me this rule and I'm going to follow it. So there's two basic ways that behavior is maintained, and that's with contingency shaped behavior, which means you actually experience the consequence. Okay, so the classic example is someone says, don't touch the stove when it's hot, you will get burned. And the person touches the stove and they get burned and they go, ah. And so they actually experience that consequence and they don't touch the stove again.
Okay. Right?
Versus rule governed is someone tells you something that could potentially happen to you and you, based on your prior experience, think, okay, I'm going to follow that rule.
So they might say don't touch that.
Yes.
You know, don't touch that other thing. Don't touch that piece of glass or you'll cut your finger.
Yeah.
Like, well, when I touch the stove, that was really hot, so I'm not going to do this either. Okay, interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it does.
Well, and that's what I love about my field is it's very logical.
Yeah,
it makes
it
a lot of sense.
It is.
And one of the fascinating things is you can really delve into what you think, why you think people are doing this because of what's going on in their mind and how they feel and all these different things. But there's nothing you can do about that. Mm-hmm. If you observe a behavior and you observe the environment and you realize there's something that can be accomplished, it's a very like exciting field to be in because there's lots of payoffs, lots of benefits, and it's not based in kind of like I'm thinking, I'm wondering,
right. But you can actually point to something that's happening.
Exactly.
That's really interesting. Now what about people who feel like maybe the rules don't apply to them? Is that more like the first example, like, oh well, I know I'm not supposed to have I'm not supposed to have unprotected sex, but I'll be fine.
Yeah, because in the past
bad things don't happen to me.
In the past bad things didn't happen to them.
Right.
So based on their history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
This is fascinating stuff. I love how it is logical.
Yeah.
And what's the best part is it's it is applicable to daily life, real mm-hmm. life. And mm-hmm. in fact, Sherry, you are using your expertise to start a consulting business.
I am. So like a little bit of my history is I started out as a teacher mm-hmm. and I worked as a special ed teacher for 10 years. And then I became a behavior analyst and I had my own consulting business working with teachers in public schools. And now that I'm out here in the LA area, I'm opening up my own business working with families. Bless you, Amy.
Thank you.
in the process of opening up my own consulting business, working with families who may have challenges with their kids.
Oh, that's great. I have a feeling I may be your first client.
No.
I want to get this on the table before we move on to other subjects, but you have a website, did you tell me?
I do. Yep. So it's super simple. It's just my first and last name. So it's www. And then it's Sherry Daisy.
You're Shari.
Yep. Daisy.
Which is like the best name ever. Is that the one you're born with?
No.
It's really cute.
But it's a name I love.
Yeah, it's really cute.
Wait, did you choose it or?
No. It's my married name.
Okay.
Oh, Sherry Daisy's the best.
Keep that married name.
Yeah.
So SherryDaisy.com?
That's it.
That is so easy to remember. Right. And you are someone who would be able to come in and work with a family and consult and examine what kind of dynamic is going on, what kind of like reinforcement is happening with the behavior of the child or the parents, I would imagine, and the parents.
It's really fascinating when you work with, like in my experience working with kids, which is where most of my expertise is, typically what I'm doing is I'm training the adults in the situation, mm-hmm. how to respond to the child and how to change the environment so the child can be more successful.
Yeah.
So it's really working with the adults to learn some, and it's not super complicated. I mean, it can be very complicated, but there's some very simple things that you can learn to do that can make a huge difference.
Oh, like what?
Well, I think
wait, we're not gonna let her answer that.
Well, no, I know, but don't you need a specific like situation?
And I thought there were just like overall rules for everybody.
Well, here's the thing. It's okay. Very individualized.
Okay.
It's individualized based on the person, the environment, all of that, but there are some basic things that come up over and over and over again in my work with people.
Okay.
So
people should have to pay you for this, right?
No, give us a free taste.
We're chatting.
It's a free taste. Yeah. Don't discourage her from free advice.
Wait, no, this is, you give a free taste and then people get hooked.
Yeah, it's like the drug dealer on the playground. That's what we're doing. Okay, go ahead.
So one of the things that I like to tell people is to talk less. So I find that adults give directions over and over and over and over and over again. They say the same thing. And then they tell me, I don't get it. You know, I keep telling him not to blah, 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 and he keeps doing it. And so one of the very simple pieces of advice that I could give people is to follow through with what you say. Mm-hmm. And then say it once and then follow through.
So you need to put your coat on.
Yes.
And then the kid doesn't do it. And then mm-hmm. what do you do?
There's a variety of different things you could do. Mm-hmm. You could guide him to the coat. You could bring the coat to him.
You could throw the coat at him. Right.
Yeah. You could drag him to the coat and force him into the coat. But repeating over and over, put your coat on, mm-hmm. is not going to do anything. Okay. The other thing is that you can set up situations so that something good happens after the coat goes on.
Like he gets a treat, like a dog?
Not necessarily a treat, yeah. but you don't allow, so in the big picture, people can have like certain rules in their household, you know, like you need to do these things. And if you don't do these things, then you don't get this good stuff. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of things kids get in our society for free, for not doing anything, computer, video games, dessert, mm-hmm. television, music, like all of those things are really extra bonus kinds of things. And I don't think we're necessarily teaching kids that those are special things that they should earn for doing what, you know, what's expected as far as behavior goes.
Okay.
So sometimes you can have things like, you know what, you didn't listen to me today when I told you to put your coat on and when I asked you to do your homework and when I asked you to take a shower, so no TV for you tonight. Mm-hmm. Hopefully tomorrow you'll make a better choice.
Well, wait, I'm still interested in the coat example.
Yeah.
So you tell your kid, put your coat on. He doesn't do it. You're supposed to just bring him the coat?
Well, you could guide him to the coat. You could bring, I mean, it's, that's where okay. it gets into the specifics of the environment where okay. I can't yeah. give like specific advice, yeah. but the bottom line is you say put the coat on mm-hmm. and nothing else happens until the coat is on.
Yeah, okay. that makes sense.
I was up visiting my sister in San Anselmo a couple weeks ago, and she, I gotta say, she has some really well-behaved children.
Every time she talks about her sister, she's always like, those kids are amazing.
She's yeah. got like a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old, and those kids, like, they are kids, but they're very, very well-behaved. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Yuta, what do? What's your secret? Mm-hmm. And she said, basically what you're saying, you tell them what to do, you follow through, yep. you don't wuss out or yep. wimp out or mm-hmm. like cave like yep. I do. And I said, well, what if your kid won't put the shoes on for school? And then she's like, well, you know, I used the example, like, put on their clothes to go to school. And she's like, well, then you pick them up naked and you put them in the car and they
naked
yeah, and they will remember, you know, by the time yeah. they're in the car getting yeah. strapped in, they will be like, no, I'll put my here's, and then they will never, like, yeah. you're calling right. their bluff, kind right. of. Yeah. So, and then that is the one time that they will not put
it's
their
true.
Clothes on.
It's so
this,
true.
This is the thing, is that when you have that type of situation, it is really a lot of effort and can be really problematic mm-hmm. and hard work for the adult the first time or two that it happens, because yeah. it doesn't necessarily happen the first time. Mm-hmm. And so you may be embarrassed and you may have to put forth all this effort, and it may be, you may be like really frustrated by the time it's over with, but your child will learn, oh, I guess when mom says to put my coat on, I better do it, because nothing else is going to happen until I do. And
yeah.
so my favorite story is when I was in college for my bachelor's program, before I even got into behavior analysis at all, I was a nanny for one summer. And I worked with these three little kids. And I kind of had, like, I guess I had this kind of going on in me already, like the behavior analysis blood mm-hmm. or whatever, because I wanted to do fun things with them that summer. And I took them out to a restaurant. And I said, okay, we're going to go out to lunch. And here are the rules for how you need to act when we're in the restaurant. And I said, like, three things. You need to do this and this and this, right? So I set them up and I said, this is what you need to do. If you don't do those things, we will leave. And it doesn't matter where we are in the meal. It doesn't matter what's going on. We will leave. So we went in the restaurant. We ordered our food and they started breaking the rules. And I gave them one reminder and they continued. And so the waitress came over and I said, I'm sorry, you know, to do this. I said, but we need to cancel our order because these children do not know how to behave in a restaurant and we will be leaving.
That's so
and they
awesome.
Were like, what? And the waitress looked at me like I was crazy. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from my own personal perspective, like, I wanted to eat that burrito. We were in a Mexican food restaurant mm-hmm. and I wanted to, like, do that too. And it was going to be very inconvenient to me. But we left the restaurant and they were screaming and crying. And I dealt with all the looks that I got as I, like, drugged them out of mm-hmm. the restaurant. And from that point on, I could take them anywhere that summer and they followed every rule.
Wow.
So it was really inconvenient that first time.
Yeah.
But
that's amazing.
Right.
That's an awesome story. I wish I had done that 7 years ago.
Well, and that's the thing with parents, you know, is that you've got this long history. So your kids have this long history yeah. of knowing how you're going to behave. So if you suddenly decide to change your behavior, they're going to
extinction burst.
There's going to be an extinction burst. And there's right. going to be some time before it changes. Right. Absolutely.
I always think it's so interesting. I mean, granted, my son was not prone to temper tantrums. So I'm just sort of talking out of my butt, but I was thinking it's so interesting when parents are like, oh no, he's having this temper tantrum in public, and they'll do anything to stop it.
Right.
I'm just like, just let him do it. Like, well, it is embarrassing, I know, but I always feel like, just,
I know, you know, a dad whose daughter who would have temper tantrums that were so bad that she'd make herself vomit.
Oh jeez.
Like yeah. in a toy store.
Yeah.
Like, it can, as a parent of a kid who does have pretty bad temper tantrums, it can be so bad that I'm worried that she'll hurt herself.
Yep. Wow, yeah.
Absolutely. Not yeah. so much anymore, but just, like, beyond, like, wow. beyond control. And, yeah. Yeah, it gets pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why it's so important that people, like, so if you hear about people like me who are giving, like, advice, like, you need to dot, dot, dot. Mm-hmm. That's wrong. No one should ever give that kind of advice unless they can personally, first of all, unless they have the qualifications, and second of all, unless they can personally observe the environment and assess the situation, because there are very dangerous things that can happen and people can harm, you know, kids can harm themselves. So it's never something that can be just like, like there are general principles of behavior.
Sure, yeah.
But you can't give like specific, you know, recommendations. Yeah. People shouldn't be doing that.
No. Yeah, no, totally. That's why they need somebody to consult with, right?
I also always think that, I mean, we're saying with a follow through, like it's really important to pick that really wisely. Like with Benji, if I give in, I'm going to do it immediately. You know, like if he's like, I want to do this. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. So he's like, I want to do it. I'm like, okay, you know, otherwise I know like you're in it for the long haul. And if I can't handle that at the moment, like I will give in immediately.
That's a very behavioral thing too. And I think it's important to respect that, like when I work with teachers and parents, I'm always, it's important to me to think about what can they realistically handle based on their own situation.
Right.
And so some people can, and that's, and I will, I've actually given that advice. Like if you are not going to follow through with saying no, then just say yes to begin with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, right. Because otherwise all you're going to do is teach them that when you say no, it doesn't matter. So, so I think that that's really important.
Yeah.
And it's, so Thank it's you. Always, yeah. It's always based on what the person can realistically do and handle. And
it's a different time, even for the same person. Like it's different on a night after work than it is like on a Saturday morning when everybody feels great, you know, or whatever.
Or if you're sick or tired
Exactly. And some nights, you just got to be like, okay, special occasion, eat in front of the TV night and don't talk to me or whatever it is because I'm really tired, but can't do this again tomorrow, but tonight we're going to do it. You know?
Exactly.
That's so interesting.
So let's put a pin in our behavioral talk for now.
Plink. Okay.
And we have some other, I want, Sherry, I want you to apply your knowledge to some listener questions and problems.
I know. And then I have one too. I have a listener question and problem of my own.
We had like a great week of just
we can keep her here all night.
Flood of people asking us for help, which
I don't know if that's
a good idea, but.
Yeah, I know. Totally.
But I love that you always give the disclaimer that you don't know what you're talking about.
We don't know what we're talking about. Everybody.
We'll give you all the advice in the world.
After I gave those like 10 things last week and I'm all proud of myself, you know, and then we start getting emails. I'm like, oh no, what did I do?
take it with a grain of salt.
Okay, yeah.
But no, this is the most recent. We got this today from a chap in London named Charlie. And I'm going to read his email. He says, hey, yeah, first off, I absolutely love the show and have been listening for ages. I'm from London and a man, but I keep getting put into the friend zone. I'm 30, nearly 31, and haven't had a date for nearly 10 years. I keep trying to get a date, but I never like one-night stands or anything. I really need to get to know someone before I can date them. I am a little bit campy. I like a lot of girly shows, music, and I hate sports. I often get asked if I am gay. Anyway, I'm rambling a bit. Basically, how do I butch it up? I need to butch it up. Or any tips on staying away from the friend zone? And then he told me that he is on OkCupid. I looked at his profile. I told him to get better pictures. He is a very attractive man who had some horrible pictures up.
How could you tell he was an attractive man with horrible pictures?
No, his first one was good.
Oh, okay.
His like opening, like you know, the profile one was sort of a close-up shot.
Mm-hmm.
But the other ones were like red eye, like a flash, like pale skin. Mm. And he had one of him like drinking from a bottle on a couch. He looked like a bum.
Charlie, don't self-sabotage. Get better pictures.
So and he said, he wrote back right away. And good news, he said he's going out on a date this weekend.
Oh, good.
A kind of a practice date.
Mm-hmm.
And he will let us know how it goes.
Oh, good.
So so he's an attractive man. Immediately after I got his email, I wanted a little more information. I said, why haven't you been out on a date in 10 years? He didn't answer that. So Charlie, come on.
Cough it up.
And I said, you need more confidence. Go out on a practice date. You're going to need some self-esteem. And he said, yes, he is low on the confidence level. But as far as like butching it up or, what do you guys think?
The thing is, someone has to like you for who you are, right?
I agree.
So Charlie, you shouldn't try to pretend to be someone else, because then if you find a woman who likes you for that person you're pretending to be, then you have to pretend to be that person all the time. And that's, you don't want to do that.
And the thing is, there's like, there is somebody out there for everybody.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. It, that's there why. Is somebody 10 years
who
is a long time.
Is going to be really, really into you.
Yeah.
Like, just the way you are.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have to get out there and find that person. You can't just sit back.
And from the behavioral perspective, so the more opportunities that you have to engage in a behavior, the more likely you're going to be reinforced. So he definitely needs to go on more dates.
Yeah.
Like, the more dates he goes on, the more likely he's going to meet someone.
Yes.
That is true. I was not thinking of it in a behavioral aspect, but it's a numbers game.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. Right. All the dating sites are.
Yeah, like, the more you go, the better you get. The more you might get shut down, but you get pretty, I mean, take it from me. In September, October, mm-hmm. I was a nervous wreck, and now I went on a date last Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and Sunday morning.
It's pretty amazing.
You're like a dating pro.
Went on a date. Like, I went away for the weekend. My plane arrived at 6:30. I had a date at 7 o'clock.
I know. It's amazing.
And now, I will say that not all these dates are hits or misses, you know, like, lots of friendly chatter. Yeah,
quantity is good over quality at first.
Yeah. But it's a practice. It's a numbers game. So yeah.
Well, and you're probably learning everything every date that you go on. Like, oh, now I know I should, you know, think about this.
Now I should filter more. Right. I should be more selective.
Charlie, I wonder. Yeah. I know you're on OkCupid, but I wonder how much he messages women. You know, I wonder how active he is on it, because I know for dudes it's harder. Like, for if you're a female, you can pretty much just sit back and watch the messages roll in. But I think it's harder for guys. So I wonder how hard you're actually trying. That might be a good way to start with the practice.
I think he said
it's a safer way.
He hasn't been that active on it.
Yeah, I believe it. That's why he hasn't. Because otherwise he'd be dating.
Yeah.
You know? So I think if the thought of a real person sitting across from you is too scary, I think a good way to start practicing is by just everyone who looks interesting, just message her, you know? And maybe one or two or three will write you back, and then you can see what goes on from there. But the rejection hurts a lot less.
But also, OkCupid is so simple that you don't even have to message the people you're actually interested in. Just, like, message everybody. Like, the next 10 people I'm messaging.
You could do that, but
it depends
on
how bored you are, how drunk you are.
But also, Charlie, I have to give you a tip. I have a good tip for dudes who are messaging women on dating sites, because I gave one other guy this tip and it totally worked for him. So therefore, it's going to work for everybody. You have 100%. Yeah, exactly.
Your track record.
And it worked for me with guys who wrote me when I was on it. But I think it's important, if you see someone who you think is interesting and you want to write her a message, it's really important to ask her a question or two about herself based on her own profile. Because so many guys write messages like, I'm this and I'm that and you're hot and I also do this and I'm great in this other way and check out my profile, let's go out. And like, the couple guys I went out with are guys who caught my attention, were like, hey, what, you know, how old is your kid? Or what do you think of this? Or your job sounds really interesting. What do you do? You know, just that kind of thing. Like, probably you want to message these women because they sound interesting. So write your charming little adorable thing and then ask him a question or two, and you'd be surprised.
Okay.
Gerlin's like, whatever.
No, I'm not like, whatever. Okay. I'm like, preach it, sister.
Okay.
That being said, I do have something to recommend for all the men and women out here. There's a new book called What Do Women Want by Daniel Bergner.
Oh, I just heard. And that was from Savage Love, right?
Yeah, so Savage has been talking about it, and I've heard of this elsewhere, but it's a kind of like an anthropological, sociological look at what do women want. And like, the one example that I heard Dan Savage talking about is that women, I mean, I don't want to get in trouble here by paraphrasing, but he said women want to be taken.
I listened to the episode.
Did you hear that?
Here's what he's...
Is this like a recent episode?
Yes,
I listened to him and I haven't listened to his last
two ones. It's the most
recent
one, I think. Okay. Or the one from last week. So he said, a guy called in and said he just had sex with a woman and she said it wasn't that great and he wanted to know how to be more, kind of similar, how to be more confident or sexually whatever. And Dan basically said, and I am going to paraphrase him because I feel comfortable speaking for him. Dan basically said, when you're with a woman who trusts you, and that's important, like if she trusts you to begin with, not she doesn't have to be in love with you, but she has to trust you, trust each other, then yeah, she will probably want to be taken. I mean, it's true. Like, you, if you trust the guy, and he said this, like she wants to know that you're so passionate about her that you're kind of just on the edge. You almost can't control it. You just have to have her. And I think that's an awesome feeling.
And then on the flip side, it's like to be away from that, to be wishy-washy and hesitant.
Is it okay if I touch you here?
Nobody wants
that. Is this okay?
Nobody wants that.
I mean, you know, we all like to be bossed around a little bit.
Go for it.
Yeah, exactly.
In a respectful way.
if you guys trust each other. I mean, it's not like in a date rapey way, you know, but like if you can establish that little bit of sexual trust, then I think that's very true.
That so get this book, Daniel Bergner's What Do Women Want? Mm-hmm. Start listening to Dan Savage. His podcasts are free. Mm-hmm. You can subscribe and pay money for a longer version, but the free ones are great. They're like 45 minutes long.
And it's Savage Love, I think.
Yes, the Savage Love podcast. Start messaging all the ladies who look interesting to you and see what happens. Charlie, you have to try harder than you are.
Well, and then this, you know, it's funny that we bring this up because I actually was listening to Dan Savage, the Savage Love cast today, because I just started listening to it like within the last, I don't know, week and a half or 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And I'm so into it.
Oh my gosh, I was like, so into it.
Like every time, every episode it's is really, just like really good. Every little segment, I'm like, oh my God, this is so good, because Dan gives great advice. Mm-hmm. The callers are interesting. It's well produced. Like
people are freaky. Yeah, the stuff they're into.
I know. The totally stuff you freaky. Learn is
it's
like,
so juicy.
Wow.
I know. Totally.
But I also feel that Dan, like, he is so concise into, like, cutting to the core. Like, he can see the real deal and just, like, express it so simply. Like, mm-hmm. what is this person's problem or what could possibly be the solution? And so I was listening to this episode today of a woman who had lost a lot of weight. Did you hear this one?
No, but, I didn't hear it.
She used to be obese. Over the course of many years, she lost a lot of weight. Now she's a, you know, slender woman, and she feels weird that people are attracted to her now being a slender person.
I did hear that.
When maybe if they knew her years ago and she was obese, they would be disgusted by her. And so how would she come to terms with people just being attracted to her, not for her inner beauty, but for her external, for how she looks. She looks hot now, and she felt weird about that because, like, why are all these people liking me that I'm hot? And so Dan had this to say, and it really struck me as something so sort of universal that, like, everybody who's dating, everybody who's out there looking for their favorite person could maybe like to hear this.
You decide which guys you're going to go out with. It's okay. It's part of it. Physical attraction brings people together. And then you date, then you hang out, then you fuck, then you spend time together and you establish whether there's emotional compatibility, not just physical surface, sexual attraction, not just chemical, but emotional compatibility. And then here's what happens. If that emotional compatibility is good enough, tight enough, strong enough, if love grows, you form a bond that then carries you through the decades. And over the decades, you both fall the fuck apart. Age and gravity shreds us all. So at some point in the future, you are going to be not who you are right now. You're going to look very different. Right?
What a concept. That's pretty amazing that you're allowed to, like, it's just like giving you permission to actually act, be attracted to somebody first.
I know, because like when I heard that, it's resonated, because sometimes you feel guilty like liking someone because they're hot,
or you feel like it doesn't count as much.
Yeah, it doesn't count
it
as
doesn't
much
count. You have to make excuses for it, you know.
But the idea that you could,
I'm just sitting over here grinning, because why do you feel guilty about that?
Well, because
it just, it seems less real. Like, you just like him because he's hot, but really you should really like people because they're just smart, wonderful,
well,
kind,
isn't
good people.
The,
yeah, but until you can find out that they're smart and wonderful, like, that's the first thing that you're going to see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but it's
just
like...
You know, like, you do like to think beauty is only skin deep and what counts is on the inside, and you would want to, you know, be not so shallow that you would not be able to look beyond the external and see the internal. And I mean, all that is good stuff. Like, we all want to not be shallow. However, when you're dating, especially online dating and looking at people's pictures, you do choose the people you are attracted to.
Yep.
I mean, come on.
You, like, just do. Yeah.
Or when you go out, when you're out in public, the people who draw your eye, like, those are the, you know, that's the first thing that brings you in, is that outward.
So do you think it ever works that, I mean, because, like, for me, myself, dating, I have gone out with some, like, you know, average, I mean, I'm not even using attractiveness as a barometer, you know, because I like to give everybody a chance, right? I'm not filtering through hot or not hot. I'm filtering through nice or education.
But you don't go out with every single guy who's asked you out on OkCupid.
No, I don't. I filter out the undereducated, creepy creeps.
Yeah.
But I don't choose every... I'm not just picking like, oh, he's attractive, I'll go out with him. Also, right. Geography, location.
Yeah.
So no, but to go out with somebody solely based on attractiveness is quite a concept. I mean,
it is.
But that won't maintain.
No.
Like, if that's all they had, if that's all he had,
uh-huh.
you would quickly be like, well, oh.
I mean, people get amazingly less attractive if you don't like them so much.
Right.
And more attractive if you do.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
No, but have you ever gone out with somebody more attractive? I mean, Amy, you are in a stable, committed relationship right now.
Yeah.
But you've...
Wait, dated. Don't you call him super awesome guy?
He's super
guy?
Awesome guy. Yeah.
He's
super
okay.
awesome guy.
But before that, in your past, and yeah. Sherry, I'm sure you in your past have dated. And then have you ever been able to go out with somebody who you were not attracted to or just kind of like neutral? And then that they were so interesting and so funny that they became hot?
Absolutely.
Well, I have, yeah.
Okay, well, because I was thinking in my life, I don't know if that's true. Like, either the physical attraction is there and you build on it and they are interesting and mm-hmm. they are funny and nice, or it's not there and they're your friend. I mean,
now,
it's like
do you think physical attraction can sustain the relationship for a while, even if you don't actually like the person all that much?
If
it was like a booty call or something, like if you were trying to have like a real relationship, I don't think you could just base it on.
I think people try to.
It could be a relationship, but it might be a tumultuous, like unsuccessful. Yeah,
right.
I've definitely had that.
But I think people have probably drawn things out for longer than they should because they're both so hot for each other.
Yeah, I would
just like,
people
probably, I'm sorry to interrupt you, people probably draw things out for longer than they should because they really like each other but aren't attracted, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. No, I do think there is a little bit of a stigma for going out, I mean, at least in my mind, going mm-hmm. out with someone purely based on attraction without having any other fundamentals, at least kind of like suggesting that like, oh, they are possibly interesting or they're possibly smart. Like, would you really want to go out with someone and tell your friends like, oh, I'm going out with this guy, he's really attractive but he's dumb and he's not funny?
Okay, I did that
and we have nothing in common.
I did that and I'm gonna talk about it. Okay. So I went out with this guy who was kind of a rebound thing. I was in my 20s, my early 20s. I worked at the restaurant and I met this guy. I saw him, I was there, I don't know why I was there with my mom the first day, but for some reason, I was there with my mom. I was in the mall, and we both saw him like across the room. And my mom just said, "That is a beautiful man." So this guy and I got to know each other a little bit, and we started going out. And I remember even people who worked there were like, "This is the weirdest couple." And he was gorgeous, like just unbelievably, just drop dead gorgeous. Like we would go places, and people's heads would turn. Like I'd be walking behind, and people's heads would turn. We went to something called in the Midwest, there's these dunes, these big sand dunes that are just big hills. And he was super athletic too, and just tan, and he's just gorgeous. And just like ran down, he just like threw himself down the hill and his hat came off or whatever. And this little boy came up to me holding his hand. He's like, he dropped his hat. Just like he was a superhero. So it was amazing. And he was a sweet enough guy. He was nice enough, but he was like not super bright. And he was awesome in bed. That was great. He wasn't the smartest guy. Like I knew it wasn't going to last. But it was really fun. I'm really glad I did it. And kind of afterwards, I knew I wasn't going to do it again. Go out with a guy like that. Like going out with a guy who was like substantially better looking than I was. You know what I mean? Like I didn't need to do it again, but it was pretty fun to do once.
Huh. I don't think I've done that. No, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
That is something I would love to hear our listeners chime in on if they have gone out with people.
Sherry might have something to say. She looks like she does.
Oh, no.
Oh, she doesn't. Okay.
All right. Well, guess what? Right. We are not done yet. We've got another. Now, this is going to take a serious turn. We're going to pull our behavioral analysis out to fix this person's life and solve all their problems.
With a grain
there
of salt.
There are no guarantee of
grain
results.
Grain of salt, everybody.
Okay,
don't sue us.
And take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
So, Amy, last week you brought in your relationship diagnostic.
I did.
You said anybody...
Oh, I missed that. Is it the 10
things? Yeah, you should listen to that.
It's a good one.
Okay.
Good
no,
one.
I haven't. I just haven't.
Okay, so you had...
And I'd be interested to know your thoughts on it now that you're professional.
Well, you had predicted that people would be listening to that episode and diagnosing their own relationship, saying, yay, we're good, or oh, man.
Right, exactly.
So we had someone write us to say, oh, man. this is our friend.
Should we say her name on the air?
We will call her Sassy.
Sassy. All right. We had Foxy. Now we have Sassy.
Okay. So Sassy says her current relationship failed miserably at the diagnostic and she wants some advice. She's living with her fiance that she owns a business with. They're getting married in the fall. They've been together for 4 years. And overall, she is happy with him and her life. However, the fiance has depression and social anxiety, sometimes more. Sometimes a little bit, sometimes more than that. And it's been the last few years. His depression is kind of like bad PMS. I'm going to
paraphrase. I'm
going to condense. He can be totally irrational, overly sensitive, emotional, snippy, and rude. It causes her to be embarrassed by him and make excuses to her friends. Sometimes she doesn't tell her friends or family things that he does or says because she's so embarrassed. And just like Amy said, she would not be happy if he stayed exactly the way he is right now. When he's having a good day, he's like his old self that she fell in love with. And she's hoping that man can come back. However, he does not want to take medication. He sounds like he's been, he was going to therapy every week and was making progress. But then they moved 11 months ago and now he's not seeing a therapist. So it's like, not so great. And she says she's not happy with the current relationship. She does not want to leave him because she feels like if he had cancer or he was in a wheelchair or something, she wouldn't leave him then. She would care for him. But then she doesn't want to set herself up for a life of sadness with someone with depression. She has read that a non-depressed spouse, living with a depressed spouse, it is contagious. The higher the other spouse's risks are for depression. So what do we got for her? I wrote her a personal email that said, get out now.
No, you did not, did you?
I think from my perspective, like I'm not one of the things that I didn't state before is I'm not a therapist and my background is not in psychoanalysis or any psychology or any of that. But as far as like the contingencies, like she can set up simple contingencies, like you need to do this or this will happen. So you need to go get help for your depression or, you know, and with specific time frames and things like that, you know, and that's a really hard thing to do. It's hard, you know, when we talk about doing that with kids, it's hard, but it's even more difficult doing that with adults.
She did say she convinced him that if they are going to get married, that he needs to start seeing a therapist again. And he agreed. I guess I skipped over that part. So she is doing that a bit. But however, Amy, I know you were going to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say, kind of similar to what Sherry said, I don't think the problem here is his depression. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is, what is he going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you can't control what he does. You can only control what you do.
Right.
Sassy. So I do think it's important that he knows how you feel. I mean, I assume he knows, but I think he really needs to know how important it is to you and how you... what the deal breaker is, I guess, you know, because he might just be, I mean, the thing about, I don't know a whole lot about depression, but it seems like the thing about, one of the things about depression is it's really hard to go get help because you're just like, meh, everything's shitty and it's not going to work anyway because you're fucking depressed, you know? So I've heard from people how hard it is to have that kick in the ass to go get it. So I do think he needs to understand how important it is for him to get it. I think it's okay. I don't know if you have plans, if you've started your wedding planning, it's okay to delay it till things get back on track.
That's good advice.
You know, without actually kicking him to the curb, like Gerilyn said. But it's okay to delay, and it's okay for him to know. I mean, like we're talking about the kids, that you mean it. You know, that you really need to take care of yourself, and one of the ways you're going to do that is to let him know how important it is to take care of himself.
Well, that's, I mean, my take on it is that it seems like, does she want to be the one in the relationship who's setting the rules and making contingencies and basically, you know, like good cop, bad cop? Like she's the one who's going to be like, you're depressed. You know, she is setting herself up to be in a marriage where she is always going to be taking the temperature of his depression and determining what kind of like, oh, is he good enough that, oh, okay, it's okay if he stops therapy. Uh-oh, no, he's, you know, like she's always going to be watching him. She's going to be
policing
the relationship.
You, I think, are having anxiety in her. Like that's anxiety. saying, mm-hmm. is it always, uh-oh, it's this way right now. Is it always, that means it's always going to be this way, the most extreme version.
Well, and it's not when you, like, contingency is like that scary behavioral term, but it's really just saying, like, we do that all the time. Like, you know what? Like, you need, if we're going to get married, like, you need to work through these problems.
Yeah, it's more about herself. Like, this is okay for me. It's not okay for me. And you need to, I think it's important to tell the other person that.
But I also think, like, when you like, so all of our history is we've all been divorced. Mm-hmm. So based on that, like, it's easy to respond like, ah, run, don't get married.
Right, right.
You know, like, how many people who are recently divorced are like, you know, don't do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's like a common response too. But you know, there's definitely things you can do about depression. There's environmental changes that you can make to help with depression.
Absolutely.
And the motivation is a big factor. And mm-hmm. so his motivation may solely come from his relationship with her.
Yeah. And, you know, as long as it happens, then hopefully he'll get on track. And who cares why he started medication? If it's because if it was self-motivated or because someone else said, I'm out of here if you don't do it, if it helps and he gets back to his normal self and more level-headed guy, then, you know, who cares how he did it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck, Sassy. You keep us posted.
Sassy, let us know how it went.
You keep
it
posted and disregard. Yeah, don't listen to me. No. Listen to them. But we have one more listener update. And this has a happy, this is all good. I think.
All right.
Okay, this is about Foxy.
Oh, Foxy. We love Foxy.
We had, I don't think, Sherry, if you missed our last episode... This is about a listener named Foxy, and she had sort of a anticlimactic, painful, like physically painful rendezvous with a friend.
With a jackhammer.
Turned
who we'll just call jackhammer.
Lover. It didn't work. It didn't work out, and she was a little bit like, you know.
And sore.
Bummed out.
And puffy.
Yeah. So after listening to our podcast and taking our words of
there was a lot of communication with Foxy.
You go, girl. Yeah. She
I can't wait to hear this last
it's a
podcast.
Good, it's seriously a good one.
She took it upon herself, and I love this proactiveness. Mm-hmm. She was like, hell to the yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get my 3 Advil, my sangria. I'm gonna go get my lube. And did she get condoms?
I think she might have. Yeah. Yeah.
And she hooked up with the same friend.
She went back to jackhammer. And she said by the end of the night he was holding on to the headboard.
Yes, go Foxy.
So it all worked
and
out.
And Foxy, see, it's good that you took Geraldine's, because I would not have given you that advice. I'd be like, your vagina can't take it. Don't do it again.
That was my advice. Go back for more.
You were like, go Foxy. And I would have been like, go to the doctor, Foxy. So there you go.
So what were the, just like briefly, what were the details of what happened to her?
She felt like the lover was like kind of a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am type situation. Okay. Like not what she's used to. Not like kind of, she couldn't keep up a little bit.
She hadn't had sex in several
years. Yeah, she
hadn't
sex in years. So she was a little bit nervous.
Told her to relax.
Yeah.
Never good.
So it sounded like there were many elements of the situation that were just not in her favor. The mm-hmm. first time. And then she took it into her own hands.
She did.
Twisted it on top, slammed it on the table.
Held onto the headboard.
I know. Yeah.
She showed Jack Cameron who was boss.
Yeah, I love stories like that. Yeah. That is the best news.
It's good.
And let's see, what else do we have to talk about? We have a little bit of monogamish.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
Chat. Do you know, Sherry, do you know what being monogamous is?
I definitely do.
Because you listen to Dan Savage.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Absolutely. Didn't he coin that term?
He did. He might have, okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because you know when you did the little quiz about his terms? I knew all of them.
Yeah. I know. I did too. Yeah, I know.
So monogamish is something I've recently discovered as I'm listening to Dan Savage. It means mostly that you are in a committed monogamous relationship. However, if either spouse or partner were to have sexual interaction outside of that partnership, it wouldn't be a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. It would be something that's just kind of put into the fold and, you know, into the mix, and you move on, and it's not like, oh, you went out and fucked somebody, I'm leaving you.
Right.
So what do you think about this, Amy?
Well, I think that,
let me just ask you, have you ever been in a monogamish relationship?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because monogamish means that both partners, both people in the partnership know about it and it's like mutually accepted, right? It's not like, it's not cheating, it's not infidelity. Right. It's like, mm-hmm. they're cool with it. So, Sherry, how about you?
Nope, okay. Never have.
How about you, Gerlin?
No, not at all.
Okay.
However, I'm wondering, like, does it work for people? Like, it seems like once you get to a certain age, I mean, people don't get mad at me, but I think, like, what's the big deal?
Well, here's how I feel.
Okay.
I feel like in my present relationship and any in the future of this one or whatever one, I definitely want to be monogamous. That feels right to me. That's what I picture. But having been in relationships where there was infidelity, I just feel like I don't, if I really love that person I'm with, like, I just don't want there to be that line in the sand, you know? Like, I just don't want there to be that, like, this is it, we're totally fucking over if you fuck anybody else or whatever. So I just feel like hypothetically, if I was in this really loving, stable relationship and one of us came to the other and said, I would much rather have a discussion, like, I am super attracted to this other person. It's very distracting to me right now. It's making this marriage very challenging. I would rather be open to talking about it than having the other person either be tortured and resentful of me or cheat on me or me feeling that way about him.
Okay. Well, we've talked about passionate love and companionate love. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about how passionate love has the NRE, the new relationship energy. Mm-hmm. And that when you're with someone for many, many years, you have companionate love where it's more like a friendship, like mm-hmm. you're best buddies. Let's just use an example. Say you've been married for 22 years. You have your partner, your mm-hmm. spouse. You love them. Everything's mm-hmm. great. But you do not have NRE. You have sex 5 times a year. You have very different sexual desires. Like mm-hmm. one, say the wife wants it all the time and the husband never wants
libido.
It. Yeah, mm-hmm. libido. That's right. The word I'm looking for. So say you have these incompatible libidos, because as we know, women in their 40s, their libido goes through the roof. Mm-hmm. So
hummingbird style.
Yeah. So in that sense.
Oh, where'd the hummingbird thing come up?
Gerilyn's head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she just made it up on the spot. Yeah.
I really like that analogy.
Yeah,
I do
too. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know how their wings beat. Right, yeah, exactly. Their heart beats so fast. Mm-hmm. So for example, so say if the wife went to the husband and was like, look, I love you. You are my everything. However, mm-hmm. I am not getting laid enough. Mm-hmm. And the husband was like, I'm sorry. This is all I want to do. 5 times a year is plenty. Like, what are you going to do?
Well, that's another Dan Savage thing, is that you can't force celibacy on someone. It's just not fair, you know, to do that if your libidos are uneven like that. So I feel like that's a problem.
I think it's a fascinating thing. Like, when I listen to the calls that come in and people talk about their different relationships, I think it's fascinating that people are so open and able to talk about that. But I think that in reality, like, the people that I know in my immediate circle, like, it's monogamy. Yeah. Like, I don't know anyone. Like, I know all these people exist because they're calling in and they're writing and they're doing all this stuff. But I personally don't know anyone who's ever, you know, attempted or lived that kind of lifestyle. But then Dan Savage will say that people just don't talk about it.
I was just about to say, yeah, you know people. They're just not talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I used to feel that way, that everyone was monogamy. But now I'm like, I wonder. Well, I mean, some people I know for sure, but then I just wonder, looking around at, like, my much looser circle of friends, like the preschool parents or whoever, the grammar school parents, like, well, I wonder.
But also there's, I guess you could put it in 3 categories, like, who's monogamous, mm-hmm. who's cheating, and who's monogamish, you
and
know?
Who's just got a big old open relationship.
Right.
Right.
Which is different, where they have actual relationships with, no.
Monogamous.
Open, I think you can have, like, actual relationships with other, you can have, like, a girlfriend,
like,
or a boyfriend.
Like, polyamorous.
Yeah,
have
or
you
just
heard
like
of being poly.
Yeah, or like have a girlfriend outside your marriage or a long-standing affair, you know, or whatever.
This is definitely something where we want listeners to call in and educate us, because
we've had a couple listeners.
A, it's fascinating. B, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Never saw this before.
Yeah, it's endlessly interesting to me.
But
however,
can I just comment then on something? Like, if you think though about, like, the people, like, when I think about all of the people that I know, mm-hmm. there are very few personal connections that I have in my life that are still happily married. Mm-hmm. So it kind of leans to that idea that, like, is monogamy, like, is that real? Like, can it really happen? Like, are there, like, life partners that you can stay that way forever with? Because, I mean, I have a really hard time, like, trying to identify.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I have 1 or 2, like, less than 5 that I can think of.
Oh, I was thinking, I know plenty of people who are happily married, like up to 5.
Right, exactly. But But I mean, like, that have been for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
But also, it's interesting because I know we have some listeners who would want to call us and say, I'm happily married. However, like, really?
I mean, I'm sure we have. It's hard to define what happily married is, too, sometimes when you're in the relationship.
No, because, like, 2 years ago, I would have said, I'm happily married.
I would have said I was, too.
I know, and we weren't. And we didn't even know it.
Totally. So, you know. That's what I mean. Like, when you're in the relationship. I think we had a person write in, even as a catch-up, like, oh, when things were really bad. And then she's like, oh, but now they're a little better, and we're getting along. And I think relationships kind of have their ups and downs, and your problems come up, and they're really shitty, and then they cool out and you're like, no, it's not so bad. And but then you like don't deal with the problem, so they keep on coming up, or they're just like an undertone of everything, and you either deal with it and it's better, you don't and you have a shitty marriage, or you really don't and you just break up.
No, I mean, it's completely interesting. I'm very much you know, I could hear people talk about this kind of stuff forever.
I mean, the people I know who are happily married,
I don't think I know anyone who's
they
happily
talk
married.
About their shit
except,
they talk
except Susan and John, of course.
Of course. They talk about their stuff, and they are super mature. Those are like the things they have
in common. And confident. I think people who are happily married are confident. Each one of them is confident
I think so too.
In their self.
And they have some themselves. Amount of you know, self-confidence, independence, and self-reliance within the marriage.
Well, this is all fine and good. And we will move on to the next topic.
Okay, fine.
No, I don't know what else. Yeah. Please, people, call us and tell us your thoughts at 818-643-1565.
Oh, I once heard a good definition of being happily married.
What?
Which was, people who are in a good relationship or happily married, they always secretly think that they got the better end of the deal. Which is a nice way to think about it.
I feel like you've said that before.
I probably have.
Okay.
I don't really have anything new to say at any point.
That's good. It's new to me. I forgot it.
Okay.
Now that I'm hearing again.
I like you.
I like it.
So it's like a good.
You definitely said that before.
It's a good, simple way to think about something.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to throw it into the personal zone, and I'm going to talk about a date that I had last weekend that I haven't even told you about, Amy. That guy, Dean.
Yeah.
Did I tell you?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So he looked a lot like your ex-husband, except
handsome.
Smaller version.
Shorter? Thinner.
Petite.
More petite. Okay.
Smaller, thinner. Like an attractive man. Mm-hmm. On OkCupid, it was just his profile, and I saw that he's 5'7".
Tally Smalley?
I mean,
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so now that I'm open to the Tally Smalley thing, that I'm like, 5'7", that's fine. That's fine with me. Like, we'll see. We'll go out. We'll hang out and find out. So met him Friday night at my go-to date spot. I have this one place that I always go to meet dates, and we get oysters. Whoever it is always ends up ordering raw oysters, and it's just a nice, like, really simple. It doesn't take like more than an hour and a half. So anyway, so I met this guy. He seemed very nice, super chatty, personable. He was like knocked out by meeting me. Like, wowed. Sure. I was coming from work. I had false eyelashes on. I was all decked out. I had high heels. He was pleasantly surprised. He was tickled. So we had this whole, we had a drink, we had oysters. And he said, the first thing that he said that rubbed me the wrong way, he said that he could tell that I'm a quality woman.
Uh-huh. That's funny.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I was like, quality woman. Like, I'm not a piece of meat. That sounds gross.
It is.
And like,
grade also, A stamped.
Yeah. And then, so blah, blah. We talked and talked and talked. And he was personable and funny. And I don't know if he's quite charming, but he was okay. And then when we got up to leave, he's like, are you okay dating a midget?
Because you're like, why? You know him?
Because he was a little bit smaller than me.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
So he had a complex about his height.
Yeah.
I think,
like, he was concerned about his height.
Yeah, he was. I just laughed. I was like, no, don't worry about it. But then as soon as he said that, I was like, oh my God.
Totally.
Not cool.
Because the other guy was just like so confident about it. Didn't bother you a bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then the end of the night, he did something very smooth. And I have to recommend this to any man out there. He almost did this like sleight of hand trick where I was walking to the valet. I had my
took your boob out of your shirt. You didn't even know. Sorry.
Wait, what did you just say?
Something wildly inappropriate.
No, I had my valet ticket for my parking and my money in my hand to pay the valet. And so as we were walking, he like took my money and the ticket out of my hand and he paid the valet with his own money and then put my money back in my hand. Mm-hmm. And it was just like,
that is pretty smooth.
It was very smooth. And then he gave me money, like he gave me extra money for a tip for the...
For you?
No.
You know what that means.
Yeah, exactly.
No, to tip the valet guy. So I was like, that's nice. I was like, oh, that was nice.
Pretty smooth, yeah.
And unexpected. So I was like, so I left the date. It balanced out the am I a midget thing. And then when I got home, he had written me this text that like, oh, he was so pleasantly surprised to meet me and I'm sexy and fantastic and la, la, la. And can we go out again? And I was like, eh, okay. So we go out for brunch 2 days later on Sunday and totally different story.
Really?
Like he was still small.
He didn't grow.
No, he didn't grow. But he talked about his kidney stones, which is like, when you're on a date, don't talk about your kidney stones.
Don't those pass through the penis?
Yes! He talked about how much they hurt. Ew. And he was very petulant. Like, he was upset that I didn't order. I ordered a spinach salad, and I didn't. I just got a glass of water. It was like 11 o'clock on a Sunday. He, mm-hmm. you know, he wanted me to have a mimosa. Mm. He was irked that I wasn't like, I could tell he wanted me to order a mimosa, you know.
Yeah.
What the f-? And then he referred to himself as a little person.
Oh, dude, this is not gonna get you laid.
Because he was telling me the story about how he's riding a horse and he managed to like navigate the horse, like steer it away from this dog, and he's like, "Yeah, it was really great because you know I'm a little person."
Oh, jeez.
I was like, oh, no, just stop talking. And then he asked me what I had done the night before. And I was like, well, I was out on a date. Mm-hmm. And then that, like, shut it down. He just, his face changed.
Wow.
He went flat. Like, as if, like, why wouldn't I be out on a date?
Yeah.
It was Saturday night. You know, yeah. Like, I didn't have plans with you. Totally, like the record needle screeched.
Wow.
And so then we just like wrapped it up. I was like, thanks for brunch. Bye. Talk to you later. Bye. And that was it.
That guy's a weirdo.
It was so weird. Yeah. But the great thing is, like, he doesn't know my last name. Like, he doesn't I just blocked his call. I blocked his number on my cell phone. Like, I don't have to talk to him again.
Yeah.
How do you do that? I mean, like, not that I want to do that to anyone, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious how you do that.
What do you mean?
How do you block someone's number?
Well, in the text, like, he came up as a contact, but then when you go to like info, you can scroll down and it says block this caller.
Oh.
And I don't think they know that they're blocked. It's just like their texts don't bounce back to them. It's just you never get them. And they never get any notification that they've been blocked because I blocked other people and they don't know.
Is that why you never answer my text, Julie?
So, but oh my goodness. And then, let's see, Saturday night, I went out with an older gentleman.
How old?
60?
Whoa.
How did that go?
I don't know.
How is your dad?
Maybe he was a good 55. I don't know.
Okay.
No, he had my... Like, I didn't even see a picture of him. He texted me, mm-hmm. and he was like, hey, remember me from last November? You want to go out?
He's that guy. I was thinking about that guy.
I guess he is.
The rich guy? The Republican?
Oh, no. He was definitely not a Republican.
Okay.
He was somebody who, like, maybe I interacted with once or twice, and obviously gave my phone number, too.
Okay.
In November, before Thanksgiving, never heard from him, and he was like, hey, I still have you in my contacts. You want to go out? And I was like, sure. So we went to a wine bar, and it's like... This is an example of having so many of the important or interesting elements that you think would make a good fit, but if the attractiveness isn't there, mm-hmm. then it's a no-go. Because mm-hmm. he was a gallery owner, a jazz musician. He, you know, he knew about modern art. He plays in quartets and quintets and just very worldly and blah, blah, blah. All the good things, but too old for me and not attractive. Mm-hmm. So it was a date of, we had a wine flight. We had a cheese board. It was nice. Mm-hmm. The place we went to was really cool. I want to go there maybe for my birthday. So it wasn't a lost cause. I mean, it was like, I went to a cool new place and I met a person. So, but still, number one is Kermit. Should I even?
Well, what's the latest with Kermit?
Okay. So this is what, Sherry, maybe you can help me out with, is why do people go back to things that they know are not so good for them?
Well, this is exactly what Sherry was talking about with the pellet and the B.F. Skinner rat. Like, if you get rewarded once in a while, you're going to keep trying. I totally thought of Kermit when she was talking about that.
So it's intermittent reinforcement is the most powerful, like, as far as maintaining behavior, you know? So that's what, when you think about slot machines and how they're programmed, it's that random intermittent, like, you never know when the payoff's going to be, that really maintains behavior. So if you were reinforced and it was a really, really good reinforcement.
It was.
You're like, I really want that again. And I'll do whatever I can to get there. Even if I have to do a lot of bad things.
Okay. So last week at this time, I was talking about how I was limerent. And I had used my better judgment and said, forget it. This person's a dead end. I'm not going to continue conversing and continuing to text and whatnot. And I was pretty darn strong for about 2 or 3 days there. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday afternoon rolled around and I was like, I was at work and I fooled myself so good.
She did.
That I was like, well, I'm not going to like go out with him, but I'll text him.
I guess we could just be text buddies.
Since I know this person's like super flaky, he's never available when I want him to be. He obviously, like, it seems like he's probably got a lot of other girls on his plate. I'm not going to fall for this. I'm just going to have him as my text friend.
Say hi. What are you doing later?
No big deal. And then within 3 hours, I was over at his place.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. But it was really fun. I got that intermittent.
Yes, you did.
You got the pellet.
I totally got the pellet. And yeah, I'm back on that hamster wheel. So, no, but I have to say for all the people out there who are single or dating or afraid to start dating, like, it is really nice to be swept up in someone else and mm-hmm. to have that feeling of like giddiness and excitement. And it's worth it to be, even though it doesn't always work out and there's ups and downs and sometimes you feel like shit. It is a roller coaster, mm-hmm. but those intermittent reinforcement pellets can be really
those
good.
IRPs, right?
Yeah, it can be really good.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know how it's going to play out. I think it probably won't play out, but I will keep everybody updated. It's a take it with a grain
of
salt.
Well, the question is, are you still going to keep...
are you still going to keep pressing the lever?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have anything else going on right now. Okay. I mean, why not?
No, there's one's judging you.
I don't have any. There's no consequences.
I mean, I guess what are like, your expectations? Are you, if your expectations are for like a serious boyfriend, you're probably not going to get that. But if your expectations are for Kermit to be his Kermit self, then why not have a good time?
Now, why do you call him Kermit? Like, where did that name come from?
Well, that's not his real name, but
and, oh, good.
And I know he does not listen to this podcast, so I can talk somewhat freely. But he really, really likes Kermit the Frog.
He has a Kermit the Frog doll collection.
Wow, that's unique.
I just made him sound really not sexy, didn't I?
Oh,
but he is. He's really cool. He's like no. rock and roll guy. He's really good looking. He just likes Kermit.
All right, no, yeah, this is the 5'7" Tolly Smalley. Mm-hmm. He's sexy as hell. I gotta say, he's got it all going on. He has like nothing bad,
mm-hmm.
except for he's
never totally unavailable.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But
and,
whatever.
Doesn't sometimes return my text for like 12 hours. But mm-hmm. Other than that, he's like super fox. So, yeah, I will put a pin in that until next week when I can update people further. But gosh, it's been a really fun show. I feel like it's time to wrap it up.
I know.
People can get in touch with Sherry at sherrydaisy.com for the behavioral analysis and consulting.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, thank you so much.
So much fun to have you here.
It's been a blast.
Definitely come back again one day.
For sure. It was great fun.
It was really
fun. Awesome to meet you. Awesome to be a part of this.
Oh, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was great.
And of course, people can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and they can get all the info they need at baldmove.com. They can write us at thebecauseshow@baldmove.com. And until then, ladies, do we have any parting words?
I guess just everybody keep on keeping on with those intermittent reinforcement pellets.
Rihanna. Good girl going bad. Take three. Action. No clouds in my stones. Let it rain. I hide the plane in the bank. Coming down at the Dow Jones. When the clouds come, we gone. We Rockefellers. We fly high in weather.